Everyone, we're going to get started with our next panel. Once again, I'm Tim Mullany, the editorial director of Senior Housing News. And this panel is Facing an Unmet Need in Memory Care, Keeping Couples Together. So a really important topic. I'm joined by three great panelists on stage. Rachel Wunderlin is the CEO and founder of Dementia by Day, a dementia care consulting company that helps senior living providers elevate their dementia care. She brings years of hands-on experience in caregiving and has published three books with Johns Hopkins University Press. I'm also joined on stage by Jessica McCollum on the end. She's the Vice President of Operations at ThriveMore, and Reed Vanderslick is the President and CEO of ThriveMore. ThriveMore is a faith-based, not-for-profit organization operating two life plan communities offering the full continuum of care, one community offering assisted living and skilled nursing, and a freestanding assisted living community serving various markets in North Carolina. As a reminder, we've got Slido working, so you can fire that up if you have got any questions for our panelists. And with that, let's dive into our discussion. So, Reed, I'll start with you. I think ThriveMore is pursuing a really interesting model to keep couples together in memory care. So to start us off, can you just describe kind of the origin story of that model and what some of its key elements are?
Sure, thanks. Yeah, the best way to tell you about it is a story. So I've got to go back in time about 8 years ago, and I was the chief operating officer at a community in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and my boss had run into one of our residents who lived in an independent living cottage, and his wife was in our greenhouse home, which was brand new, a couple of years old, and he said, you know, we have a support group that gets together every week, and there's about 20 of us if we're all there. And we've been talking the last few weeks. We don't think your industry has what we're looking for. And of course, my boss said, what are you looking for? And he said, well, it's too complicated to tell you in a parking lot. So he said, how about coming to one of our next sessions? And my boss said, sure, I'll send Reed. So so I trek off to it. We go through introductions, and I mentioned the comment, right? So I said, so I understand you've been talking, and you don't think our industry has what we're looking for. And I said, what is it? And they said, well, we've been talking, and what we really want is we want the ability to stay together as a couple. And so we want a home that looks like a home on the outside, feels like a home on the inside, but when we as caregivers need to run errands or do things, we've got a spot, they called it a studio apartment at the back of the home, where they could escort their spouse into. And that studio apartment would then open up, would have another door that opened up into, you know, what I would describe as an adult daycare area. And I said, wow, that's really fascinating. I said, I don't know everything that's going on in the country, of course, but I said, I'm not aware of anything like that. And I asked the question, I said, so what are you doing today? And there's two stories, Tim, I'll never forget. The first one said, well, let me tell you about my morning. He said, I was supposed to go golfing 9 holes with my buddies, and I can't be gone 18 anymore. I just can't be gone that long. So I had a caregiver lined up. It was the same caregiver that I had last week for a doctor's appointment. Last week, everything went fine. This week, when the caregiver showed up, my wife wanted nothing to do with her. Started screaming at me. I started screaming back at her. We both started crying. We sent the caregiver away. We had to pay the caregiver for showing up, and I didn't go golfing. That was my morning. And you start to just, I mean, it starts to really feel real. Mm-hmm. The second one was the gentleman that, you know, lived on our campus and his wife was in our greenhouse home. So he knew me. So he said, Reed, for us, it's a little different. We've been married 67 years and we had two habits our whole married life. The first is we always dined together. So when our kids were little, we'd sit at the table, we'd cut up the food, we'd clean up, and then the two of us would have dinner together. And the second habit we always had is we held hands before we fell asleep. And he said, it's beautiful, and I can remember a tear running down his cheek. And he said, as beautiful as the greenhouse home is where my wife is, we can't do either one. And so at this time, right, I'm sliding in my chair feeling awful, like we failed these people that want to stay together. So I met with them a few more times, and then I'll kind of fast forward, because I ended up taking a promotion as a president and CEO in Ann Arbor. That community happened to be landlocked, and I was there a few years, and then I moved down to North Carolina, and the communities we had have land, so the idea started to percolate. Well, I moved 3 months before COVID hit, so COVID hits and it's like we're not strategic, right? We're just trying to survive and do the right thing every day. But fast forward, we have a strategic, coming out of COVID a little bit, we have a strategic planning meeting with our board and senior leadership. And one of the themes that comes up in the small groups that ends up on the board is this idea of being the known in every market as the best in memory care. Real good visionary strategy. Then the next one that comes up is being innovative, and kind of ding, ding, the idea comes back into my head. And so I took a pause, shared this with our board, and they said, that's great, we love it. Like, you know, it's exactly what we'd like to do. Do you know if it works? And I said, no, we never got that part. So they said, well, spend some architect money and see what we can do. I was fortunate to talk to an architect firm that does a lot of work in senior living that's based in Winston. And they actually volunteered to do the pre-work so that we could get a construction estimate at no cost to us. The only thing they asked is that we use them for, because they got really excited about it. So we did. We worked through it, and I have just a few slides if I can show.
Yeah, of course.
So this is the vision, right, of what it would look like from the street. So again, In the spirit of looking like a home from the outside, right? It's got a one-stall garage because that's really all we need. But it's got a front porch, a yard, and then I'll show you. This is the kind of drone view of this. And you'll see there's the way we have it designed. First of all, it's circular. We played around with a lot of options, whether it was rectangle or a horseshoe. But we ended up with a circle, and it really worked, because you'll see the 12 homes that we have, the front of the home facing the road is that, you know, the part that I showed you from the street. And then the very back little appendage there is the, call it studio apartment. And then that connects into a circular corridor. The circular corridor and the outside courtyard area are all secure. So again, like in the principles of the greenhouse, which I'm a big fan of, right, is this ability for them to come and go into the outdoor space as they want. So we've created that ability. The one building that looks different there is what we're calling the clubhouse. And that is where we will have caregivers around the clock. So if one of the couples gets a call at 10 at night and the grandchild ran out of gas a few miles away, we'll have staff there that can take care of their spouse. So, and then the last, very last one is really the interior of the home itself. And so again, trying to keep an open concept. And then you can see at the very back of it, now Rachel's kind of coached us to make that studio apartment more like a den. And she'll probably talk about that as well. And then you can see the open door to the corridor. And we do plan to use technology a lot in this, too, to give us notifications when the caregiver comes and goes.
That's great. Yeah, I saw a lot of cameras come out or phones come out and take pictures. Yeah, it's really interesting, right? So, Rachel, I want to bring you into the conversation. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about, you've used the phrase community within a community in relation to this model. Can you elaborate a little bit on what that means and what that vision is?
I love this whole concept. Community within a community is a sense that we can cater to the spouse who is living with dementia and the caregiver spouse. And the caregiver spouse gets the benefit of being able to engage with the other caregiver spouses, right? It's really this community, and then within that community, you have these smaller ecosystems. When I first was talking to Thrive More about this concept, I immediately loved it. And I thought back to a woman I'd met in maybe 2016, she came to a talk I did in Jacksonville, Florida, and I didn't speak to her again until 2018. She had put my first book aside, which is When Someone You Know Is Living in a Dementia Care Community, and she picked it up one day because she was at her wit's end caring for her husband every day at home, and she finally read it, and she decided, after reading my book, to transition her husband into memory care. She said it was the best decision she ever made, and she was able to be his wife again. She was able to visit with him, sit in bed, watch TV. Well, COVID hit, right? And she was locked out of his memory care. So you can actually Google this at some point. Her name is Mary S. Daniels. She got a job as a dishwasher in his community so she could go and see him. Yeah. So the second, you know, we talked about this, I was like, I know who to call. So I got a hold of Mary, and she met with Monique, who's a member of the Thrive More team down in Florida, and she is loving this concept. Her husband has since passed, but she was like, this would have made our whole, you know, existence a lot better. Yeah.
Yeah, great. Rachel, to stick with you, can you maybe just describe a little bit about Mindful Impressions, that approach, and how that's integrated into this model as well from a kind of operational standpoint?
So we built a program called Mindful Impressions, which is the dementia care program that the other Thrive More buildings use, really focused on small group activities, a lot of hands-on programming, some art focus, and of course, what I always teach, which is embracing their reality, living in the world of the person living with dementia, tossing out the word lying or fiblets or therapeutic lie or whatever, and focusing on how do we do what's true for them, you know, and teaching families that same concept who are really struggling with this sort of black and white, like, is it a lie, is it not a lie? We're going to be implementing that in this community as well. So there's going to be hands-on small programming for the spouse living with a cognitive impairment. And having that, and then having the ability for them to continue living their lives essentially as normally as they would if the person with dementia didn't have dementia, it's awesome.
That's great. All right, so I've got one more question for Reid and then two for Jessica, I promise. I've actually got questions for Jessica, but Reid, I think first it would be helpful if you could talk a little bit about the feasibility of the model and how you're kind of thinking about it sort of penciling out.
Sure. So once we got through this part of the process, we were able to take it to a construction company. It's the very early stages when they're really giving you a budgetary number. They gave that to us, gave it to then our CFO to kind of run the numbers. And he came back to me and said, the model, I think he was a little surprised. He goes, Reid, the model actually works if you can have a 95% occupancy.
Oh.
And you know, I felt like that's probably possible, right? It's unique and there's not a lot of this. But I also made a commitment when I, you know, when I came on to the organization that every new project that we do should stand on its own. So we are actually in a capital campaign to raise at least $1.5 million, which will allow us to service the debt at 80% occupancy. And just so you know, what I'm planning from a charge is that the monthly fee will be equivalent to one person in independent and the other in dementia. Mm. So that they can come on our campus and say what model works best for us, the traditional or this new model.
That's great. So I guess, Jessica, that leads right into you. Can you talk to us about this campaign and where you're at in the timeline?
So Rachel mentioned Monique. I'm actually sitting in for Monique today. This capital campaign is a part of a larger capital campaign called Immeasurably More, which is a $3 million three-year campaign. And as Reid mentioned, we're hoping to raise $1.5 million for this project to improve the lives of our memory care residents and their caregivers. We are still in the silent phase of that campaign, and obviously we're so excited we're not completely silent. And we are currently just shy of $200,000.
All right, great. So. Wow. Any philanthropists in the audience who have their checkbook with them?
Yeah.
Jessica, to stay with you, can you talk a little bit about measuring the impact of the model and explain that element?
Yeah, sure. Because there's nothing like this quite yet, we're going to use working with groups like Leading Age to look at industry trends. And we currently have two methods of measuring impact as an internal organization, resident patient satisfaction surveys, which we do annually, as well as an internal scorecard that measures evidence-based industry standards. And so those will be the two things that we look at impact initially, and then as this model hopefully is replicated throughout the country, we would look at how that impacts the residents and the dementia residents as well.
It's really exciting, I think. Mm-hmm. Reid, question for you. What happens when one spouse dies? Is there kind of a transition plan?
Yeah, we've had, you know, a lot of discussion, and, you know, we could change our mind yet before it opens, but our thinking right now is if we're building this on a campus of a continuing care retirement community, so we have other product to provide service. So our thinking is if one of them passes away, we will transition the other one to our traditional model. And we normally, when people transfer, especially independent living, we do a transfer fee, but in this model, we would waive it. But that's our plan.
Got it. Rachel, question for you. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about how to communicate about this model to, say, the adult children, or just overall kind of market something that's untested?
I think this model, honestly, will speak for itself in a lot of ways, because this is such a huge need. The problem that we all run into frequently, right, is if a couple wants to stay together, they're sort of met with a challenging decision, which is, do we both move into memory care? Do I live in independent living? Do you live in memory care? Do we do some sort of assisted living combo with somebody coming in to assist? And there's just not really been a good answer. So I think even speaking to that initial problem and saying, we have a solution for that. I feel like couples and then also adult children are going to immediately see the value in keeping this couple together if that's what they wanted to do. I think it really does speak for itself in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Reed, I know that obviously financials, making things pencil out is one challenge that you're addressing through the capital campaign. How about operationally? Anything you can talk about in terms of challenges you anticipate or just must-haves for this to work?
Yeah, I would say the one thing we've run into is just the regulations. Do we license this? If so, how does it get licensed? Every state's going to be different that way. In North Carolina, the avenue to license this, if we want to be licensed, is that that from the corridor in and the clubhouse would all be adult day license, and then the studio apartment or den at the back of the home would be overnight respite. But it's been challenging to get regulators to really understand that. And just one simple example, I was on a Zoom call with a bunch of them, including attorneys from the state, and the adult day person said, because I used the example, right, 10 o'clock at night, and you know, one of the caregiver gets a call about their grandson running out of gas, and so we're going to be there for him. And she said, but adult daycare is, you know, 9 to 5 or 8 to 5 or whatever. And I said, yeah, but this is, you know, a different model, right? We're trying to do something different. And she said, but it has the word day in it. And I'm like, a day is not sunlight, right? A day is 24 hours. But just, you know, it's...
I also work in the evening. Yeah.
It's, you know, so those are bringing challenges. But we're working through them, and there's enough people there excited about and see the need.
Yeah. I'm curious, in the previous panel, staffing really dominated the conversation. We got so many audience questions. Can you speak a little bit to the staffing model here?
Sure. Again, being a fan of the greenhouse model, the plan is to have two universal workers on day, two on second, and one on third. And so they will be dementia trained. They'll also be, you know, food serve safe trained. So they will be paid at a higher rate, and we built that into our model. That's the plan right now.
And I guess another question that came to mind was, you mentioned that part of the inspiration for this was talking to someone who said that in the current model, he couldn't eat with his spouse anymore. Can you talk a little bit about the dining component of this and how that's going to work?
Sure. Again, that I'll tell you, that's the squishiest in my mind, because, one, we just didn't talk a lot about it. They were so focused on their home and having that immediate, you know, caregiving aspect that we didn't. But we do anticipate that, you know, first of all, these couples are going to form a bond, and so they will want to dine together. So we are building that clubhouse with the capabilities of providing dining. Again, being on a campus, We can use, you know, our main kitchen for a prep kitchen. So we're going to, you know, again, provide like a greenhouse, kind of a light commercial, heavy residential kitchen there. We also anticipate, right, there's going to be, you know, 85th birthday parties and stuff where, you know, we'll invite the whole group. And so we are creating that clubhouse with that capability as well.
Okay, very cool. Rachel, I'm thinking it might be helpful. First of all, just a reminder, we have Slido working, so if there are any audience questions, please send those in. I've got that up. Rachel, I'm thinking it could be helpful if you can just describe a little bit about your relationship with Thrivemore. I know I said at the outset that you've got a consulting firm, but maybe just describing a little bit more about your relationship and the role and vision you're bringing to this model.
Right, so I'm a dementia care consultant. I work all over the country. Dementia by Day is the name of my company. We work all over the country. We work primarily with senior living companies who have a dementia care. They have dementia care units or wings, but not necessarily a plan in place for what the residents do all day, how they educate staff, how we educate families, a brand. So when I started talking to Reed, when was that, 2020?
Yeah.
Was it COVID? I think it was COVID times.
Yeah.
I feel like you had just gotten to Thrivemore. I think we connected on LinkedIn, of course, and started chatting. And over the next like 6 months or so, we decided to partner up and work on the existing Thrivemore buildings. And at some point in the last year or so, you mentioned the couple's memory care program to me. And I was like, oh, please let me be a part of this. Please let me be a part of this.
That's great. A couple audience questions. Is this model prepared to help couples age in place with things like Hoyer lifts, programming models, as they progress through the stages of the dementia?
Yeah, we haven't really, so philosophically, I'll tell you, our goal is that, yes, they can live there to end of life. And you know, we'll support them in every way we can. In terms of physical, you know, we haven't, you know, greenhouse, for example, we'll do a lot of the lift system in the ceiling. We haven't built that in. But certainly our goal is to support them to end of life.
Does Thrivemore have a hospice business?
We have a
line?
Hospice provider that okay. We contract with.
Got it. Another question in terms of the overnight. Well, this actually says oversight. I thought it said overnight. Will there be nursing oversight services or perhaps overnight services?
So, again, being on the campus, we do have nurses there, and this is going to be actually very close to our clinical in terms of on the site. So we feel we can support it that way.
And then another question, can you elaborate a little bit on choosing the site for this? Was it just a function of having the land availability, or were there other market conditions that you weighed?
Sure, it's a little bit of all, Tim. It's, we do have space on the site, although the site is very challenging because it's heavily wooded and a lot of contour. But we also have, I think, some of our best staff clinically to support something new like this. And this particular market where our life plan community has the most competition. So it gives us something to just kind of differentiate in the market.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Another audience question, will the adult day portion be open to the general community?
Yeah, that's, you know, that's come up a time or two. Our plan is not at the initial opening because we do want to kind of develop a pace and a rhythm to this new model. But I think we are open to doing that. And again, if it's licensed as adult day, we'll have that ability in that interior space.
Yeah. I guess I'm curious about your take on adult day generally, because, you know, in the previous panel, there was a lot of talk about the middle market challenge and the high costs of staff. And I've heard it put forward that adult day as a model can help fill that need as a more affordable alternative. So do you think, even this model aside, that has potential to meet that part of the market?
You know, it's interesting because adult day seems to make so much sense, and yet it's struggled to really grow. But I think in light of the model, that, you know, again, if we can bring people in and show them this, it may work. One of the things we try to do to address, you know, kind of the middle market, and it doesn't solve it for everybody, but if we can do our share, right, is we will do what we call a sliding scale. So somebody who doesn't necessarily qualify for Medicaid, because in North Carolina, you can get Medicaid dollars for assisted living, including memory care. But, you know, it pays very low, as you can imagine. So we'll do a sliding scale for those people that don't qualify for Medicaid, but can't afford private pay. So maybe they can afford 70% of private pay. Hmm. And we fundraise for that delta. And of course, we have to limit it, but at least we can do something.
Yeah. That relates to maybe another audience question. If you could just repeat again how you charge, and if you have any numbers that you can share in terms of what those rates are for IL versus the memory care rate.
Sure. So the intent is that the monthly fee will be based on one person in independent living and the other one in our memory care. The independent living charge is a little bit based on square foot, so you know it's hard to give exact numbers, but you know it's going to be in that 12 to 15,000 a month range, depending on square feet.
Got it. That combined.
Yeah, combined.
what's the time? Another audience question. What's the timeline for construction and opening? Do you have that?
So we're in the yeah. fundraising. So you know, my hope is we have a July board meeting, and my hope is that we've made enough progress that the board is going to say, go ahead and move forward, and continue to fundraise. They may say, go ahead and move forward when you hit, you know, X dollars. Then go ahead, or they may just say, you know, hold. You know, so we don't really have a necessary timeline, but the construction cycle would be 12 to 18 months. We are moving forward all the way to CD drawings, and then we'll reprice it all.
Got it. We've got just about 2 minutes left. We've got another audience question. Rachel, maybe this is a good one for you, given your purview on the dementia care market overall. Do you think of Adult Day focused more on the arts or community service or maintaining current physical capabilities? It would be more successful, basically. Is there something that could change an Adult Day that would make it more successful, as Reed described?
I'd love to see more Adult Day options, mm-hmm. because as Reed said, it really does seem to make sense. We just don't see a whole lot of it, I think, in this country. Mm-hmm. One thing that I think would be really helpful, and one of the ways I often advised if a person is struggling to get their loved one to go to Adult Day, is to tell, you know, to ask the person if, you know, if they are interested in going back to work. And essentially, the person living with dementia goes back to work. They go to the Adult Day. Maybe they're given a name tag. And even in a lot of memory care settings, we'll do this as well, right? Where the person feels like they're not there because they're living with a cognitive impairment. They're there to help others. So I think, you know, things are starting to sprout up. I'm seeing a little bit more in the Adult Day space, maybe with, like, partnering with a daycare where there's kids. And things like this, a good option to get people interested in this model of care who maybe previously wouldn't have thought of it or thought to themselves, there's no way my so-and-so is going to, like, agree, right, to go
right.
to this program, right?
Absolutely. We're down to about a minute. Another audience question. I guess, Reed, is there a total estimated budget for construction that you already have in mind?
Yeah, so the construction, that includes the site work, which I said is fairly challenging, was $11
million. $11 million. Got it. I guess in this last minute we have, Reed, just want to open up to you or Jessica. Anything else in the works at Thrive More that's exciting or innovative that you want to shine a light on?
We're very excited because we're all dealing with the workforce issues. So we are very excited. On that same campus, we're planning to add child daycare. And so we will build it, we'll lease the space out to a provider in the community, and they'll give our employees' children priority access. And then we're going to do a sliding scale to supplement based on their income so that we can really try to make it affordable.
Great. Well, this was a super interesting conversation and great questions from the audience. So thanks to all the panelists, and thanks for all the great questions.
Thank you. Thanks.
I think we've got a networking break coming up next.